Hello and welcome to another episode of 10,000 Hours. My name's Grant Spanier.
And I'm Vince Cochi.
Today's episode 4, and we sat down with Barrett Brooks of Atlanta and the organization Living for Monday. Talked to him about inner circles a little bit, huh, Vin?
We did. We talked about inner circles. We talked about meeting new people. We talked about, you know, grooming that group of people that you want to spend a lot of time with and work on projects with, and, you know, what it takes to maintain that group, be it through relationship rituals and correspondence, and just, you know, there's a lot of good tips, tricks, and stories shared, and I think you'll enjoy it.
Hot sauce, too. We got into hot sauce, which is...
We did. We touched on hot sauce.
You know, I would have liked to get a little bit more into it, but, you know, maybe we'll have him back. Or we could do that offline. We should... I'm thinking about starting up a hot sauce club.
Are you, though?
Yeah, I forgot. This isn't the time we talk about that stuff. Enjoy the episode. It was a good one, and Barrett's a good dude. Huzzah.
Huzzah.
Well, they weren't doggy gangbangs. They were gangbangs in general. Now, all of a sudden, it's like bestiality. And whatever. Okay.
And we're recording on my end.
So, Mr. Vince.
Hey.
We got a delightful guest on the other line here. Let's keep him in the shadows for a second, behind the curtain. But could you just tell me right away what you've been working on?
Absolutely, man. Me and a good personal friend and also coworker, Elliot Mattson, have been working on this project for a bicycle tour company in Rome, Italy. And in all likelihood, it's going to be spec work, but... He and I have been kicking around a few ideas that we think would be really cool, and we're going to try to get in touch with the people out there. But this last week we've just been – he brought me this company, and he thought it was really cool, and he wanted to know if I wanted to contribute on the writing end, and it seemed like a really sweet way just to, like, kick around a few ideas. And so that's what I've been working on this last week.
Man, please keep me in the loop. I'm pretty intrigued by that.
Yeah, will do, man, will do. Hey, man, what have you been working on?
Been working on this. Been working on this a lot because I want to make it good, of course. Been working on, actually, Creatives Go West. Had some really good progress on that. Documentary,
yeah.
Of course, that you were involved with. Fun project. Met with the director today, and, you know, we did some really good work. So I'm very excited about that. And, you know, of course, you know, the classic client stuff. We're doing some packaging work, doing some writing work, all really good stuff. Speaking of good stuff,
and
the king of very, very good segues, very good, very good, very good, very well segues. Our guest today is somebody who I have spent a very intimate period of my life with. We shared a room together once for a couple weeks, not in a weird way. It was part of a thing. That's, you know, Mr. Barrett Brooks, who of course is the founder of Living for Monday, which is a site for young professionals who want to build a badass career. But more than that, it's an idea to me that has really, really resonated, and it's something that I live every day, and is really powerful for me, is the idea that you love what you're doing and that you want to go to work on Monday because you love what you're doing. And that's really hard for a lot of people to understand, I think, is it, and a lot of people will maybe peg that as workaholic or whatever, but it's no, it's just passion and just a real fucking... it's just a feeling, and it's a way of life. So, Mr. Barrett Brooks, welcome to 10,000 Hours.
Man, thanks for having me. I appreciate the introduction too. It was definitely an intimate period of our lives that we spent together.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't mean to overplay that. yeah, I mean, We did, you know, I mean, intimate in a lot of ways, of course, not personally in a you know, relationship. Well, no, in a relationship sense, but not in, of course, a romantic way. Okay, hold on. No, it was, man, it was a transformative period, I think, of both of our lives, and it was a really intense thing that we did, and that was the Seth Godin internship.
I'm sure we're gonna touch on that during the duration of the show.
Before we get too far into it, right?
Can we ask Mr. Brooks what he's working on?
Hey, Mr. Brooks, what are you working on?
Yeah, so I guess I get my turn now to talk about what I'm working on.
Jeez.
So
sounds solemn.
Yeah, so start of the new year is we're kind of changing directions a little bit at Living for Monday, and a lot of that was inspired by the project that we were on together this past summer. And we're really going kind of micro and local on the Atlanta scene with all of our content and work that we're doing at Living for Monday. And we figure if we can be the best in Atlanta for young professionals, then we can probably figure out how to be the best elsewhere. But if we're not the best in Atlanta, then we probably can't be the best in the world. So we're kind of taking it local and trying to figure out the right content strategy to approach young professionals and give them what they need to build badass careers, just like you said.
That's interesting. That's something that's been really relevant to me recently, is just like thinking about just like doing a thing, keeping it local, whatever, but just finding a thing that people really like and just blowing the shit out of it. Right. I mean, pardon my language, but right. I mean, you're trying to like really build your audience there and figure out not the formula per se, but like the thing that people really like and that you can provide value for.
Exactly. And I guess the thing is, you know, if you can't figure it out at home, then how the hell am I going to figure it out in Minnesota? And I think it's much easier to kind of sit down across the table from somebody down the street and figure out what it is that they're attracted to and what they need than it is to try and figure it out across the internet, across the world, whatever it might be.
Hmm.
That's really interesting.
So instead of trying to throw these big ideas out on the internet that you're like maybe overthinking, it's let's test this here and then apply that on a broader scale. So let's figure out what works here right in front of us and then apply that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the thing is, you know, people in Atlanta know people elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we build this raving fan base here at home and we've got our 1,000 true fans sitting around here, those people are going to share and it's likely going to spread on its own. And that'll probably kind of tell us where we need to go next. But for now, let's do the local thing and let's be good at it.
Rock on, man. I'm all about the focus and the simplicity. I think that's great. I'm just curious, what's the longer term vision for that?
You know, I think you kind of hit it a little bit. Uh-huh. In that if we can find a model that works, from a content standpoint, maybe from a training standpoint, maybe from an event standpoint, kind of finding the right revenue model over the next year that works here in town, then I'd really like to start spreading out. You know, uh-huh. I've been really inspired by, show called Small Empires lately, and the most recent one I watched was about Artsicle, and that was kind of what they did up in New York. They started in New York for people to rent art and put it up in their homes, and they've been able to spread because they were so popular there. And I think we can do a similar thing. And I kind of realized that when I heard that a site called themuse.com was up for Wall Street Journal Startup of the Year, and they're basically doing what we're doing in a couple extra cities. And, you know, I think it's easy to get caught up in the day-to-day of what you're doing and not see it how other people see it. And apparently what we're doing is pretty cool to a lot of people. And so I think we just need to get really good at it close to home and make sure it's sustainable so that we can affect more people.
Totally. I'm a huge fan of Small Empires and Alexis Ohanian, which is a show on The Verge about people who are building small empires, startups. He's going into them. It's super interesting. That gets at a point you're talking about, like, really in a really interesting way to me, is the idea of building something people want to pay for. And we're talking about it in the same way that a musician or somebody in the olden days would sell a product like a, you know, fucking I don't know, a shirt or a basket or a thing. It's like thinking about your content and your information and your, the value you're bringing with that, right? Your insight, in a weird monetary way, which is, it's not weird. It's weird to like think of it as weird. Sorry.
It is kind of a weird thing though, right? So, you know, thinking through the fact that I can create something and kind of put it on paper, put it on the internet, and it's easy to give it away for free. It's easy to make it scalable and free. But what that means is that somewhere down the road, I end up having to charge you your attention or time or energy on ads or on somebody else paying for you to get it for free. And so the question is, can we build a model where we give you plenty for free, but then we give you some stuff that you pay for, and we have this kind of mutual exchange of value where we don't distract you with all the bullshit that comes with so much of what's online, and we give you what you're asking for in a more in-depth, curated, valuable way.
That was a good point, man.
Man. We could go all day, but all right. I think this is a good time to really hop into what we're really trying to cover here, which is the inner circle, the idea of people who are in your life, who are in your professional career, you know, does that definitely, you know, cross over, but people who you trust and you lean on and you work with, collaborators.
Right. And the role they play in your personal, philosophical, and ideation journeys.
They're insanely valuable. I mean, that's just, but I guess a good question to start with is, how do you find those people? You know, where do they come from? What's your experience with that, Barrett?
I think the first thing you gotta kind of take a step back and say, okay, you know, what happens in our minds with the people that we spend time with? And there's this really interesting piece of social psychology research that says, okay, you know, you might think that you should go network all day, but really, really, you can only focus on about 50 relationships in your world. And so this is not like 50 friends and 50 family members. This is just like 50 people that you can really give any kind of conscious time and energy to. So if we take that as our starting point and we say, all right, I got a max of 50 people I can really be influenced by at any given point in time, it really ups the ante quite a bit on who you're letting into your life on a regular basis, I think. So that's the first point. And the second thing, to answer your question on where have I found people that I want to let into that circle, I think it's really about trying to get outside of where I feel like I even deserve to be. And so let me qualify that for a second. We all think that we deserve to be in a smaller place than other people might picture us. So I think a great example is like going up to New York and working with Seth Godin and the whole team on the Krypton project. That pushed me. Those were people that I want to influence me, that I wanted to learn from. You know, you're one of them, and it was a great experience. Another example of that is the Atlanta Global Shapers, which is a group that they have in like a ton of cities around the world, 250, 300 cities. And it's just people that push me. They're better than me in a lot of ways. And I think that's where I go to, is where can I find concentrated groups of people that are just flat out better than me in some way or another? Because what that does is it makes me want to get better, and it makes me want to be more like them. And if I can create a group of 50 of those, then over time, I'm going to just continue to soak up the knowledge and information and get better and better and better.
That's awesome.
A great point. I think, I don't know the exact reference or quote or whatever, but it's something about how a good CEO is somebody who hires people who are smarter than him. It's just the attitude of like trying to surround yourself with really talented people and soaking up whatever you can from those people.
Yeah, and I think a mistake like many, or like way too many people make is those things, and you mentioned it yourself, Barrett, that makes you kind of uncomfortable, right? The first time you start like interacting with people that you, if you're honest with yourself, they're better than you in some way, they're kind of like what you aspire to be, that's not as comfortable as hanging out with a group of your friends that, you know, maybe you went to school together, you spend a lot of time together, you're recycling the same ideas. And while that might be comfortable, it's not necessarily good for your growth, and it's not necessarily good for you being industrious in the future.
else for
so,
the future.
No doubt about it. No doubt. You know, I look at it. So, you know, we're recording this right after the 2014 college football national championship happened. Jameis Winston wins the Heisman, shows up freshman quarterbacking in the national championship game, and he sucked for three quarters. But in the fourth quarter, he stepped up and they won the game, and he was the guy. He was the MVP. And I think at some point you've got to have that MVP moment where you're with this group of people that you believe is better than you in many ways, but you kind of hang. You know, you have this moment of clarity where you add to the conversation and you push back. And I think that's when you kind of realize, okay, you know, yeah, maybe they're better than me and I can learn and like this is the group I should be around, but I can hang. This is where I'm supposed to be. I belong here some too.
Yeah, I think with that, for me, it was when I think about, I don't want to say coming up, but like really delving into the whole creative industry and advertising and all of these things, I was so interested in what people were doing. As in, when I talked to, for a while, I really wanted to be like a strategist, a digital strategist or a planner or whatever. And I was so interested in what those people were like reading. I was like, so what do you read every day? What are the books you read? What are the blogs you follow? What are the things that make up who you are? And I've been thinking about that a lot lately because I have some people who like come to me for a coffee and we, you know, we get together or whatever. And I think about where I was at that same moment. And I'm like, you know, like I was so fucking interested in who they were and like how they approached their life slash work there. And I think the value of what you're talking about is soaking up this information, is soaking up this approach. But really, it's like kind of humanizing those people and figuring out like how are they doing it per se? How are they approaching their work? And what are they doing every day that sets them apart?
Yeah, that's right. I think it's, you know, you don't need to be them.
Right.
I think is of maybe course. The point here.
Whoa.
You know, and I think that's what you're saying is, yeah, learn from them, but then take it and do you. Mm. Like, go do the equivalent for your life. So if I read a biography on John Adams, the second president, maybe I don't want to be president, but maybe a lot of the way he went about becoming president can be applied to making Living for Monday the best site on the internet for young professionals.
I got to say, Barrett, I mean, like maybe you should start, you know, digging your own holes and shitting in them.
It might be a good strategy. There might be something
but
to be learned.
But the point you make is a good one. Not about the shitholes, but about like surrounding yourself with people. They don't even have to be like – and that's another thing we get a lot, especially if you're in the advertising persuasion, you get this like very inbred network of advertising people and you like have a lot of the same thoughts and a lot of the same ideas. But having people in your network that can help you professionally or personally, but don't necessarily align with your same career.
Yeah, or even
yeah,
the same
absolutely.
Viewpoints necessarily.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of it is like, how do you get outside this groupthink kind of mentality and be different in some way? And I think you've got to push yourself by being around people that are different than you, whether it's their work or their race or their beliefs or whatever it might be, just so that you get some perspective on life and the world and the way things go.
So I'm going to high five all of the stuff that was said right there. And I'm going to make one point and then I'm going to progress us to another point. And Barrett knows, and Vince knows, I am a little bit psychotic about Chuck Palahniuk, you know, big fan. But, and this is a quote I have quoted myself many, many times, but nothing of me is original. I'm the combined effort of everyone I've ever known. And within that is like, you know, we could go for days about, you know, stealing like an artist, Picasso, yeah. Whatever. But, you know, the point is like, you really are. I am sure that I don't know the exact quote, but it's something about, you know, you're the aggregate of five people you spend the most time with. Whatever. At the end of the day, like the people and the influences you surround yourself with are fucking your life.
They shape you in a very real way. And so it's really important that you put a lot of thought into who you surround yourself with.
Absolutely. And jumping from there, I think the idea of, you don't need to brand your inner circle. You don't need to like have monthly flame lit meetings with cloaks and whatever. But
you don't have to.
Well, you should. if you're serious about this business. No, but I think leading into that, what does that look like? I'd be interested to hear from you, Vin, a little bit too about what Inner Circle means to you. And I think both of you, in a really weird meta way, you guys are in my inner circle, but what does that look like? Vince, you and I, we've known each other for 3 or 4 years in a weird way, right? We met at some weird intern for a day thing.
We did.
And then we were working on a thing, whatever. But I guess I would just be curious to hear about what you guys view as your inner circle and I guess what that looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you want to jump in first, Barrett?
Yeah. So, we poke a little bit of fun about monthly candlelit meetings. But the one thing I'll pull out of that is I think ritual is really, really, really key
when
you're talking about the people that you keep close, because otherwise it's too easy to, walk away from a conversation like this and then wake up 6, 9 months, 12 months, 15 years later and say, holy shit, where'd my inner circle go?
And I'm dead.
I've been bouncing from one to one to one to one to one relationship and nobody really knows me. Nobody's influenced me because I didn't keep them close enough. Yeah, exactly. And
right,
I'm dead.
Right.
So, I think ritual plays a big role and I know it has for me. And so I definitely try and establish kind of cadences with the people that I want to keep closest. And it's been a great tool for me.
That's a great point.
Absolutely. For me, with any project that I've tried to get off the ground, a weekly check-in or this time, whatever, blah, blah, blah. That stuff is so incredibly valuable because what it does is it creates accountability. It creates a buildup that you don't want to
And it
let
creates
down.
Momentum, too.
Oh, momentum. I mean, which, whole nother show topic, let me tell you.
Right, really though. The more that you meet, it's like the classic inertia equation, right? The Newton's. I'm not a scientist, but he's got this law that says an object in motion will stay in motion. So if you get if you make the conversations a ritual, and if you make the influences of each other a ritual, then it's just going to keep feeding back into itself, and it's going to become more and more important the longer it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. So within that, let's dig in a little bit, How does, I don't know what we're calling this. I mean, we're calling it inner circle, but how does that thing start? What does that thing look like? And let me preface with an example that might lead you guys a little bit. But for me, when I think about my inner circle, I think about, there are a few different layers, but I think about people who, when I have a project or a thing I really care about, I'm gonna get some feedback from them, and I know that they'll give me honest feedback, and they'll give me some real notes on a thing, and I think that those people have come about through many different ways. Vince, we started working on that internship for a day, which was not a joke, but it was a short thing, but we stayed in touch, whatever, and I guess for me, what I'm getting at to boil it down is what I'm getting at is starting a relationship with someone and kind of identifying them as someone you want to work with, and then just being patient enough to find a point to work with them. So for me, it starts with having a point. My point is I want to work on this sort of project. I'm very passionate about a few different things, design, storytelling, whatever. And then I'm constantly looking for people to work with on those sort of projects. And there's just so many ideas wrapped up in that. But
right.
Well, let's bring it back for a second, though. I think there's ebb and flow, right? And you've got things in your life you're focusing on at given times. And your inner circle is not going to stay the same from the time you're, 21 to the time that you're 95 and die. There's going to be some cadence to it, and it's going to be related to what you're working on and what you're interested in and who you want to be influenced by. And so I think for me, you know, there's these kind of layers of, yeah, what's going on in my life right now, but also these layers of, okay, who am I mentoring? Who am I on kind of a peer level with that I want to grow with? Mm-hmm. And then who are the people that I aspire to be like? Mm-hmm. And those are probably kind of a different way of making cross sections of that inner circle.
So that's a very interesting way of looking at things. And let me ask you then, how do you approach that? So when you're talking about mentoring people, like it's hard to like put anything into like universal bullshit terms, but what do you like, are you mentoring someone right now? Have you mentored people? What does that usually look like?
Yeah. So I think it's, you know, if you flip it on its head, you're basically becoming the person they aspire to be like.
Yeah.
And so what you're looking out for is just kind of keeping your head on a swivel for, hey, who's come into my life recently that's clearly a little bit behind on the path as compared to where I'm at? And who do I think shows promise enough that I'm going to invest time in? And who's taking it serious enough, you know, not in a like not fun way, but who's serious enough about being good or great that I want to be around them and help them? And I think if you look out for that, then you find a few people that you really, really want to give the time and energy to when they reach out by email or phone.
That's a really awesome thing. I'm glad you brought that up because that's been on my mind since we started this conversation. And so I'm going to follow it up with a question that might be tough to answer, but how do you identify these sort of people? You said the ones that showed promise, the ones that you wanted to invest your time in, and kind of on the other side of the coin, when you look to people that you want to aspire to be like, what do you look for from them as well? So maybe just some help for people who want to identify the people in their life that they either want to mentor or they want to aspire to be.
I mean, I think at the end of the day, it comes to follow through. You know, I could go at that 100 different ways, but if you and I have a coffee meeting and I say, hey, I enjoyed this, you know, let me know if you want to get together again. I'm open to meeting as much as monthly. That opens the door for you. And so if you're clearly behind me on the path, you know, it's kind of your job in my mind to follow up. And if you follow up a month from now and you keep doing it month after month after month, well, now there's a relationship there and I really care about you. And so whenever I've had a mentoring relationship where somebody else mentors me, I'm the driver. I'm always scheduling the meetings. I'm always following up. I've got calendar reminders to make sure I've got the cadence in place and I seek it out. And because those people have clearly indicated to me that they're willing to invest in me, I just keep doing it. Mm-hmm. And I'm very cut and dry on what they're comfortable with from a frequency standpoint. We just do the thing. And so I think it goes both ways. You know, if you're going to seek somebody out, be the driver for that. I'll mentor you, but show me that you're going to show up.
I mean, this is a very natural segue to something, Vince, we've talked about before. I mean, I tweeted out, you know, several hours ago was, don't fucking laugh at me. No. My life is Twitter. What else do I have? No. Okay. You bastard. No, but here's what I said. And what I said was, sending a thank you earns people incredible points in my book. So easy, but so impactful. And this was based off of somebody who had followed up with me from coffee last week. And I'm gonna look at his exact, because I think this is honestly like relevant and important, what his exact words were. But the idea of sending a thank you is like,
it's indicative of that follow through. It's like it's a symbol that suggests that this person might be follow through material in the future.
Yeah, so I found it. What he said was, thanks for meeting with me last week at Lesco. It was awesome seeing a different sized agency ran by young and driven people. Blah, blah, blah. Thanks to Grant, you know, Sam. And, like, to me, that's oh, sweet. And I was with Jake Woodbridge, who is the director of Creators Go West, when I got that. We were just sitting there, and, like, that had popped up. And I was like, wow, I honestly didn't remember that guy's name. And now that guy has cemented a place in my mind. And look, now I'm talking about it. But seriously, that guy has now taken the step from bullshit coffee, you know, run around to, okay, I respect this guy on some level. And I, what I said was, when I was like crazy about like getting into this like agency world and like, you know, learning about all these people, whatever, I was just looking for an excuse to email somebody, right. You know, not in a bullshit way, but finding an authentic reason to contact someone. What?
Yeah.
You know, that's exciting. So why not? Why would you not follow up with a totally. Thank you? You know, send a written thank you if you can, but
that's always my policy.
An email.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even that went a long way. I now know that guy's name. I now know who he is. Like, I have this crazy elevated respect
right,
for him.
Right. And well done to him. It's just Barrett, do you have any more of these, like, indicators? Like, a thank you note, that's an indicator of someone who might be worth letting into your inner circle. Are there any more indicators that, like, come to mind for you?
Definitely. So let me touch on the thank you thing for a second. So, you know, I'd say like maybe 20% of people will send the email, and I'd say maybe like 2% of people will send the written note. I mean, how many handwritten notes have the two of you gotten lately? Because I know I haven't gotten
one
very
ever,
many
maybe.
At all.
From people who I've not met with in a long time. They're just people who I have respect. You know what I mean? Like, we have a good relationship. Zero.
Exactly.
Almost.
So that in itself is huge, and you can differentiate yourself from 98% of people legitimately by simply getting some cardstock and sticking the fucking thing in an envelope and sending it. So there's that. But the second thing I'll say is there's this great point in, I think, The Art of Nonconformity, the book by Chris Guillebeau, where he tells a story about a guy that he saw at some event he was doing. And the guy said, yeah, you know, I love your story. I hope to do something that's similar sometime in my life. And Chris kind of said, well, why not now? And the guy said, yeah, maybe I'll get started soon. So, you know, fast forward like a year, and Chris sees the guy again, and he walks up and he says, oh, Chris, you know, I love what you're doing. And, you know, hopefully someday soon I'll get started. And Chris kind of said, okay, why not now? But his point was that when he walked away from the second conversation, his mind was in a place of, this guy's not serious. Mm-hmm. And so the point related to that is, if somebody tells me they want to do something, they want to accomplish something, or they send me an email and say, hey, I want to achieve this, how would you do it? And I send you a thoughtful response back, we have a thoughtful conversation about how you can achieve what you want. If you do the thing, if you ship something, if you complete a project, if you take action on what we talked about, that's an indicator. Because that means you're not about just bullshit conversation, kind of smoke and mirrors. It means you showed up to get advice because you wanted to do something. And I want to be around people that make and do and complete and ship. And I think that that's the biggest indicator that you can possibly find.
Yeah. I mean, it's the Preach. Indicator, right?
The number one. And I don't think there's really much else than that, you know?
Yeah. It, really what you're getting at is like, the reason most people reach out to someone that they admire or someone who is influential, which is usually the same thing, is because they're looking for some sort of like cheat code.
Exactly.
You know,
they
like,
want to know how
like,
you did it.
Let me put on the game shark. Like, let me put on the game
yes,
shark
nice.
And what combination
nice
do I
ref.
Put in? No. Yeah. And man, it's been crazy. Like, I've been obsessed with this stuff for a long time, and more and more and more. The last few weeks have been crazy influential in me just thinking, holy shit, you just have to go keep doing stuff. Like, stop like searching for your like life plan or your answers or your whatever in some article. Like, these guys have really good insight, and take that. Now go start doing stuff and
use it.
And then create your own insight and create your own answers. I've just really just whew. I'm trying to like cut out almost in a lot of ways, like cut out the internet right now, because I'm just trying to make stuff. And I know that a lot of insight is coming from that. And we get so caught up in the idea of reading these articles. And when I say articles, I mean, you know, I'm talking about like this, like FASCO stuff, which is so good, but you know, FASCO and Inc. and entrepreneur stuff. It's just, it's like, oh yeah, they're all the answers. And then you try to apply any of that, and it's like shit, you know? I mean, they're smart, but you have to like take what they're saying and then start applying it in your own way. And to be honest, if you get too involved in that stuff, it's messy, because when you have to ship, when somebody's got a gun against your head, like, that's when it really matters, right?
Yep. And the thing is, I want to be the FASCO. I don't want to read the FASCO. I want to be them.
I am so FASCO.
I mean, seriously, though, if that's the thing, then the job is not to read them all day. You know, you might have spurts where, okay, I want to accomplish a task. I need to do a discrete period of research to understand how it's done in the world so that I can be better than anything else that's out there. But then I'm going to put all that away. And I'm going to tell it to shut up and I'm going to go do the thing. And then I'm going to come back and it's going to be done and it's going to be great. And for a lot of people, they can consume that stuff all day because they're just dreaming. They're sitting there and they're not going to do it anyways. And I don't mean disrespect by that, but for the people who actually want to make, I think you're spot on. Just put the internet away.
There comes
Turn
a
it
point.
Off,
yeah.
Go do
where
your
you
thing.
Have to be like,
yeah,
it's not that in like the intake of this, of other people's ideas and these articles and stuff. That's not a bad thing, but you have to have it within yourself to eventually flip the switch, shut it off, and then start doing it for yourself.
Yep. And if the person whose articles you're reading has a book or more, if you haven't read every single book that they've written, stop reading their articles because their book is the better stuff.
Hmm.
Whatever you're reading on the internet is where they vetted the ideas that went into the book.
That's a good point.
Wow, that's a really interesting point. That was a great point, man. That was really good. And I think it's kind of like a perfect time to just take a break and maybe talk about an off-topic topic. What do you think?
All right, shake it out a little bit.
Yeah, let's shake it out.
Vince, I feel like things really got heated there.
They did, and you know, that's a nice segue, man. And this time it was an actually nice segue, when most of the time your segues are shit. I'm going to tell you that right now. Like, total shit. That was actually pretty sweet. That was a pretty solid one. And so this week's off-topic topic is hot sauces.
Hot sauces. I like it.
Hot sauces.
And from one of our guests in the South, this should be a pretty ripe topic. I'm gonna kick things off with this. How many different types of hot sauces are in your fridge right now, Mr.
I only
America?
Have one. And
okay.
The one is a specific one from Whole Foods that has, I don't know what it's called, but it's got like a wizard on it. And it's the only gluten-free one I could find because I can't do gluten. So I have an allergy. So I'm sorry, but I ruined it.
Man.
Just one.
Dude, you did not ruin
that
at all.
I bet it's
man.
Not the you same as the it. One that's in your fridge, though.
No, I got a selection. I got a selection of hot sauces.
Vince, of course, is originally from Mexico City, and so he sometimes dips into a Hispanic or a Mexican Spanish accent.
Yeah, that's right.
Selección.
Yeah, exactly. I thought it was a good time to break out the fake accent.
Yeah.
So, all right, I'm actually curious about gluten-free hot sauces, though. Have you always, like, you say a gluten allergy, have you always been gluten-free then? Or do you remember a time, like, when you did have gluten hot sauces?
I did. I'm not sure that a lot of hot sauces have gluten. I just know that this was the only one that was specifically labeled gluten-free. And so...
I think what you're talking about, Barrett, sorry, but you're talking about Edward & Sons Wizards Organic Original Hot Sauce. Spicy.
Could have been.
Whoa.
Hot sauce.
Did you just pull that out of thin air? Or did you like look that up quick?
Well, define thin air.
So Bear, are you not a big hot sauce guy?
I love hot sauce. I love hot sauce. I love spicy things.
Oh.
I'm also,
you love
legitimately
spicy things.
Am 1/4 Mexican. And so I enjoy hot sauces.
Of course.
Dude, that's awesome.
I gotta say, I think it's hot sauces, but you guys keep doing your thing.
What's like the strangest thing you'll put hot sauce on?
The Barracuda.
Strangest thing, man, I don't know. My favorite hot sauce, like peppery hot sauce, comes from a Mexican restaurant in my hometown of Dunwoody, and they put it comes with carnitas tacos. And it is delicious.
Yeah, man. Oh.
What's that restaurant called? You know,
it's called Los Rancheros, and it is the only one, the only Los Rancheros. It's not a chain, so you got to come to Dunwoody and have a meal with me if you want to eat there.
Should we go, man?
I'm going to put that in the show notes, and then I think yeah, we should go.
Nice.
And our true intentions are revealed. We're just trying to come hang out with
you. We're just trying to get a meal out of Barrett. That's what.
That's what it is. It makes a lot of sense to invest in traveling, you know, plane ticket, you know, luggage, whatever, a hotel, whatever, just to go get a free meal.
Fair trade off. Sure. I'm completely down for it whenever you're ready.
You're very fair trade. I respect that.
Legitimate Mexican food might be worth it though, because that. I don't know how many meals on earth are better than a really good, spicy, hearty Mexican meal.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say, you know, definitely sushi is up there, but we don't think it is.
Yeah, that's a different, like...
That's a whole nother show topic. we should really get some shorthand for, like, show topic. Like,
That's an ST. I don't like that.
Oh, God.
Nope. Scratch that.
How about a top?
That's a top.
We're getting into, like, I love you man territory right now, I think.
Great movie though, like, really underrated, right? That was that's like Rudd and what's his name?
Siegel.
Rudd and Siegel.
We'll do the podcast at 7, or we'll do it like 3 weeks later.
I mean, honestly, that is a whole nother top. Vin.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. It is the idea of like passive aggressive and think feedback, you know, giving feedback and like being real about a fucking meeting. Jeez, goodness gracious. I have some meetings where I'm like, wait, so our next steps are to like schedule a meeting. What? Where?
Yeah, no.
Who are you? I'll kill you. Speaking of hot sauce. Oh, wait. Yeah, I didn't even really riff on hot sauce, did I?
Oh, that's all right.
Jeez, guys.
We covered what we wanted to cover. We like it on some stuff. You know, I put it on my hamburgers. Yeah, you know that? I put it on my hamburgers and my hash browns.
Oh, hash browns. Yes.
Yeah, man. That's Vinny, pretty good.
Tell me about your hash brown strategy there. What sort of hash brown? I mean, there's a big difference between hot sauces.
It's a dramatic difference, yeah. I think, like... My favorite continental hot sauce is Frank's Red Hot's Classic. It's got like a buffalo vibe. But then my favorite like all-purpose hot sauce is Cholula. Like it goes on things that are not like Mexican inspired. It goes on pretty much anything that you want a little punch on. It's like so good. I'll put that on my French fries. You know, I'll mix that into my ketchup.
What about your girlfriend?
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, I come from a Frank's Red Hot place, and I'm trying to, like, cut it out a little bit, because for a while, Frank's Red Hot was just, like, you know, it was the jam. It was like, yeah. And it felt a little bit too ketchup-y in terms of me putting it on things to make it seem like, something I was comfortable with. It was almost like we could totally expand on this, but the idea of me going into a situation where I would, like, have something to make me feel like I was in a normal situation. And it was, you know, it took me away from the situation.
It was like a safety blanket. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And that can be good, but also it can prevent you from getting the full effect of the situation. So I've tried to expand a little bit in hot sauces. And
well, that's awesome. Cause I'm going to end this hot sauce discussion on one recommendation. The best hot sauce I've ever had. It was it's Rottweiler, and it's got like raspberries in it.
Interesting.
Was psycho good. It was like it just elevated whatever meal I put it in.
Barrett, I gotta say, the word interesting and you know, that comment there, it's a very Minnesotan thing, and most of the time we just mean like interesting is code word for
Well, it sounds like a vinaigrette with a hot sauce.
No, it's like it was very subtle with the raspberry.
All right. Well, I mean, like, where can we get this? Like, should I buy this? I don't know. Should we put that in the show notes?
Could you just put like Rottweil in the show notes? Because I don't have it offhand. I got it as a gift.
Who gave it to you?
My grandmother.
Okay. Now we're getting a little bit of legitimacy here.
Yes.
Honestly. And what do you put it on?
I put it on everything, dude. I put it on my hamburgers.
That's a fucking fries, like Frank's Red Hot's line.
No, they can go fuck themselves. I've been putting on stuff since way before they came out with their like putting on a cucumber sandwich and yelling at the Queen's face or whatever they did. That's fucking stupid.
Do you have anything else you'd like to express towards them?
No, that's it, man. I got a little passionate. Got a little wrapped up in that.
So, this week's sponsor of $10,000, Frank's Red Hot.
Put that shit on. This is awkward. This is uncomfortable.
Okay.
All right, well, dude, you touched on something in that Frank's Red Hot discussion mm-hmm. where you were going away from it because it was becoming too much of a comfort zone thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I want to wrap that back into our last words about this topic. Can I do that?
Please do. I mean, honestly, I think we got to, like, let's get on this topic, you know? Let's talk about it.
Yeah, all right. So something I wanted to address, like, I think at certain points, and this was totally unintentional on my part at least, like, when we're talking about this inner circle of people and, like, building a good inner circle and surrounding yourself with the right people, we're not, like, saying, like, ditch your friends, like, forget about all the people in your life, like wipe them clean if they don't have any, like, professional, like, influence in your life. But it's more just, like, being thoughtful in selecting the people that you surround yourself in at all times. And more than just, like, selecting the people you like to be around, but also selecting the people that challenge you. Is that accurate?
Yeah. I get what you're saying. I totally get what you're saying. It's not like, hey, ditch all of your friends, go find some fucking incredible people,
right?
And go be friends with them because then you'll become good.
That's not what we're saying.
Yeah, but that token, it's like there are people who I meet and I just know we're at a very different life stage. And that doesn't mean, like, we can't be friends, we can't be, like, really close or whatever. But at the same time, to be totally honest, like, it's going to be hard for us to connect on a certain level because my focus is in a very different place than theirs. And what I care about is so incredibly different. And it's not just about, you know, two people coming from different perspectives. It's about two people coming from, like, totally different life phases. And sometimes it just doesn't work, and there's nothing wrong with that. And it doesn't mean you, like, cut people out of your life. But at the same time, for me, I don't know, man. I'm pretty pragmatic about the inner circle.
Hey, listen, like, yeah. So here's a point, though. I mean, we all know that you don't eat a cupcake for every meal, right? But you might have a cupcake one afternoon because you wanted a cupcake. So, you know, right. You've got some friends that you have history with, and they're in your life. They've been in your life. They've been by your side. They stick with you. And yeah, of course, like, don't go drop them just because you listen to this podcast episode and you're like, oh, well, Barrett, Grant, and Vince, they said, you know, take care of your inner circle and I got to get rid of these over here. No, I mean, come on, like,
yeah.
Take care of the people that have been with you. And just acknowledge, you know, if you are in different life stages, acknowledge that, be aware, be emotionally intelligent, say, hey, you know, you're there, I'm here. That's cool. I'm still going to spend time with you because I value the time that we've spent together in the past, but also recognize that you don't want all 50 of those people to be like that because you're not going to be pushed in any way.
Yeah, that's exactly what was on my mind. And I'm glad you illustrated it like that.
Yeah, so if I may, I think there are a couple of important points there. And I think at the end of the day, like, this whole podcast and what we're trying to do here is to give people, like, very actionable things to do. And so on one hand, what I will say is, like, at the end of the fucking day, all we're talking about is self-awareness, one, which is, like, who are you? What do you care about? Like, figure out ways to figure that out. Honestly, like, that's the best advice I can give to anybody is go figure out who you are. What do you like? What do you want to do? You know, that is going to give you a confidence purpose that you couldn't find elsewhere. But once you move beyond that, you know, besides self-awareness and knowing who you are, I think it's really like finding people that push you and then keeping them engaged. And there are like a lot of different ways to do that. Vin, something that I've like started doing and there are a range of things, but like something is like a brunch club.
Yes.
As silly as that sounds, as stupid as that sounds, I have a brunch club, and what I try and do there is curate people. God, that sounds so fucking dumb. But honestly, like curate people who are like doing cool shit and who can like bring a different perspective, and beyond that, just like building like kind of a little bit of like a family. And Barrett, this is really getting at that idea of ritual. Man, it's getting at that idea of ritual, which is so important. Is like Sunday, 11 a.m. It's not every week, which kind of keeps us on edge. But
it's most weeks.
You know, it's most weeks. Yeah, I would say it's like, you know, every other week, you know, we're getting brunch and we're getting it as a crew. And there are all these really cool intersections that happen when we get together. And the kind of rule of thumb is like, bring people who like have something to contribute and who want to get involved with cool shit. And it's not like this fucking, grading system. It's like, well, let's look at, you know, this point. No, it's just like, are these people genuine? Do they want to do cool stuff? Like, let's bring them into this mix because they have something to contribute and something to give. And if I have a project I'm working on, I can bring it up and people will give me feedback. And that's not so unlike your mastermind groups that you're talking about, right?
Not at all. I think that's exactly what it is. You know, it doesn't have to be this like formal structured conversation. It's about, I think it's a really good, talking about indicators earlier, if you can bring up what you're really working on right now, like the thing that you're spending your time and life and energy on, and people will respond and get it or ask more questions until they get it and then give you feedback, those are the people that are going to push you. It's the people who you can't really bring the stuff up with because they don't get it or they don't want to get it. Those are the people that are going to hold you back. But I digress. So, yes, I think mastermind groups are about finding a consistent group of people that you want to get into a ritual with who are going to push you and you're going to push back on so that you get better and better and better together. And I think that goes back to kind of that peer level group. You're kind of at similar stages. And so you can go through it together. You can go on the journey together.
Do you have any of these rituals that you might like implement yourself? Like any examples?
Me? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've got two. One is I have a mastermind group that meets every other week and has been for 2 years now. We love those guys. I mean, they bread and butter. We get shit done. We hold each other accountable, share ideas. We know everything about what's going on in the businesses of each other. And the second one is kind of riffing off of brunch club. I started a ritual 3 months ago where I have a dinner party at my house that I host and cook for and make a cocktail for and all that kind of thing once
all
a month.
Right. Yeah.
It is. It's always gluten free. It's always organic. It's always whole foods.
That's awesome.
And it's kind of like that part of it is not big, but it's a kind of a mini way of like saying, hey, you know, you can eat good food and it can taste good and whatever, but the kind of thing I tell everyone is this group of people is never going to come back together in this place with the same, you know, counterparts again. And so it's a once in a lifetime kind of experience. And I think that's special. And it's not the same group every time, but for me, it's a ritual where I'm constantly bringing people that might inspire me or do inspire me into my home and letting them see, hey, this is how I live and this is what I cook. And I want to give this to you as a gift and I hope you enjoy it.
That's an awesome ritual.
So I got to give credit where credit's due. I got it from a book called Never Eat Alone by Keith Ferrazzi. And in it, he basically says, you know, people say that it's like an old person thing to have a dinner party. But it's a fucking awesome way to get to know people. And there's just something special there about having them there and cooking them a meal.
So for you, like, sounds so funky, but maintenance, you know, what is relationship maintenance look like? If we're going to get meta, I think it's like, hey, Barrett, you and I, you know, we roomed together for 2 weeks. We worked on a really important project to us, especially at the time together. And I think we bonded in ways that, you know, a lot of people, you know, they're just never going to be in that situation. And so it's like a very unique bond. But like, how do you maintain relationships? And I don't want to get too deep. I guess I don't know. More and more, I'm thinking like, I don't want to get too deep into like, set up all these like crazy systems. Like I'll check in X amount of time. I'll check, you know, I really want to simplify that down, but I guess.
What are your tricks for like making sure these rituals become rituals and don't just become like one-time things, and how these like great meetings and these great introductions become lasting relationships?
Yeah, I think it's huge. I think it, although we don't want to go down the rabbit hole, maybe it is about systems. And so like for the mastermind group, for example, we just have a repeating calendar event into forever. That's every 2 weeks. And we just don't miss it. You know, I mean, sometimes we'll change it or maybe we'll move back a week or whatever, but it's just there. And we know we're going to show up and we know when and where and how and whatever. From a dinner party. Yeah, it's exactly. Accountability. From a dinner party standpoint, you know, I put it on the month for the third Wednesday of every month, 3 or 4 weeks ahead of time. My calendar sends me a reminder and says, hey, send them invites, send the next crew invites. 2 weeks out, send a reminder. I get a reminder to send a reminder. 3 days ahead of time, I get a reminder to go shop. And I set, you know, those four different things up one time. And now forever, I've got a monthly cadence there. And I just know. And I keep a spreadsheet of people that are interesting young professionals that I feel like would enjoy that environment in Atlanta. And I try and bring together groups that might have something in common, you know, individuals from the group are going to find somebody else there that's like this little golden nugget that they didn't expect to find, because only I knew that they had a connection because they didn't know each other ahead of time. And then just as far as, you know, general relationship maintenance with people, yeah, I got a couple of calendar reminders that are on certain cadences, whether it's a, you know, weekly or monthly or quarterly kind of thing. And there's a list of names there that I say, hey, these are the people that are important to me and it's time to check in. And even if I don't do it right then, it's about seeing that name pop up and being conscious of the fact that I'm either deciding to or deciding not to get back in touch. I think that's your writing, though. I think at the end of the day, that's why we find scalable ways to impact many people. And when we hear requests, it influences the way that we think about writing. And if we're listening to them the right way, then we're producing those scalable ways to impact people. And so that gives us some of that leverage back. And then the people that continue to cut through and continue to cut through, I think that's like why Seth does an internship, because somebody that's been reading his stuff religiously for a long time is going to apply and he's going to see it in their eye. And when he sees it in their eye, he's going to invite them to come be with him for a period of time. And he knows the impact that has on them. And I think we drive back to, you've got a limited number of spaces and it's nobody's fault. It's not yours. It's not mine. It just is. And so if you're going to let somebody in, who's going out the other side?
Right. Exactly what you said, which is if you let someone into your life, like you have a limited amount of energy and attention. And so that means a lack in a different place or whatever, you're pulling from somewhere else. And so think about it from that perspective when you're going to reach out to someone. So if you're going to try and start a relationship with someone who you think is fucking awesome at a thing or whatever, like, they have a really limited amount of energy and attention. So how are you going to, A, break through the crowd of people who probably reach out to them? Because I think a very early on thing is you see people you respect and you're like, fuck yeah, like, I want to, I love what you're doing. And you're just like hoping for some sort of, you know, reciprocation, like you're going to be involved in their thing. But as you go on, you realize like, wow, they've really worked for this or whatever. And so how can you get involved in that world in a meaningful way? And that's a lesson I think that, you know, pervades, you know, advertising, as in how can you provide value? How can you intersect in a really authentic way and create a relationship with someone that is meaningful, that is going to last, and that gives you opportunities to grow together?
Yeah, and okay, let me give one more example, and then we'll close it out, I promise. So, all right, so let's take a concrete example to bring this thing home. So let's say you wanted to work, like actually work with Tim Ferriss, okay? Everybody knows Tim Ferriss probably that listens to this.
Sure.
Yeah. So there are a ton of posts on his website, right, on his blog, but there are few enough posts that while the lazy person is sending him an email to try and get immediate reciprocation to feel good, to get that burst of dopamine right then.
Yeah.
Some other guy is out there spending a concentrated 1 or 2 or 3 weeks reading every post that's ever been published on his site, analyzing them and saying, here are opportunities for you on your blog to plug holes that are not yet covered and they might turn into your next book. That's the guy who, when he sends the 3-sentence email that says, hey, Tim, love your work. I spent the past 3 weeks reading every post on your site. I've got 25 ideas I'd love to share with you. Can I send them to you? That's all they say. And Tim says, holy shit, this guy's fucking insane, but I'm curious. And now you're in. And that is a completely different thing than the guy who reads a post and says, oh, Tim, I love you and I want to be involved with you.
And let me be the first to say thank you, Barrett Brooks. This has been an awesome conversation. We heard a lot of valuable things. I don't think we said it. I don't know about you, Grant, but you definitely said a lot of valuable things, man.
No.
And it was a lot of fun, too. It was really, really great. Hey, Barrett, if people wanted to get in touch with you and keep track of what you're doing, what should they do? Where should they go?
The best place to find me, because it keeps everyone short, is on Twitter, at nice. Barrett A. Brooks, 2 R's and 2 T's. And if you want to send me an email, send me an ask, a gift, or a thank you to Barrett at livingformonday.com, 2 R's, 2 T's.
Perfect.
CC me.
I would love that, actually.
Put that in the show notes. All right. Well, thanks again, Barrett. This has really been great.
Hey, thanks, guys. I appreciate you having me, really.
Awesome.
Take a step back. I think it's been okay. I mean,
are we good? Hit record.
No. We are. But man, you know, ship it.